Hey, yo, what's up, everybody? This is the MMA Talk Show. And we're doing something special this week because, man, we probably just lived like the craziest weekends of our lives. And like we needed to talk about it a little more and recap the Samurai MMA shows and the BTC 13 shows that we attended. We attended both. It was a crazy idea. I won't say that at like 4 or 5 in the morning on the night of Saturday to Sunday, I was like, oh shit, why the fuck did I take this decision, man? I just want to die right now and I'm like 5 hours away from home. But in the end, it was all worth it. It was an amazing weekend. And Max Carabin is here today to discuss it more because he was along for the ride. He was with me. So what's up, my man?
Hey, what's up, everyone? You good, Faber?
I'm good. I had the chance to sleep, which was rare this weekend. And now I feel much better. I still need sleep, though. Yesterday, I fucking went to sleep. After the podcast, we did, the podcast with Greg. It was about 2 hours long, so a little more. I had some stuff to do after it. But let's say I went to sleep at, 4 p.m., woke up at 10, went to work, and was crazy tired all night long, even though I just slept 6 hours, so...
Yeah, every time we go to Ontario, we sleep, 30 minutes before we go, and... It's not always a good idea.
Yeah, that 30 minutes is the word. Basically, that's how much time I slept between Samurai and the BTC. But let's do it. Let's begin with Samurai MMA, probably the best night of my whole life. And that's because I had the chance to do commentary for the first time of my life. I was the guest analyst along with John Ramdy, an absolute legend of the game. And the guy who just made me feel so comfortable, from the beginning, I wasn't even stressed because he's so good at his job. He's so good to just give me the good lead-ins and stuff. And it was just easy. And I don't want to flex on people and shit, but I think I made it look easy. To be quite honest, I think I made it look easy, even though it was my first time. I gave it my all, and I think that the result was amazing. And I'm really proud of myself. I'm really proud of everything that Man, I grinded for 5 years for that shit, and I'm just so happy that Danielle and the people at Samurai trusted me because, I'm a wild fuck. Sometimes I just come on and scream and ruffle feathers, and, I'm not the most PC guy, let's say, like that, and they still believed in me. They knew that I could have a more serious side and do the job when it was time to do the job, and I'm super glad that I had the chance to prove that to people, basically, to prove to everybody. Yeah, I'm a fucking weirdo on the internet saying stupid shit all the time. But when it's time to be serious and do commentary for an event and try to represent for the fighters, because in the end, my job is just to represent for the guys, to tell what they've been doing good about their training and trying to guide people through the fight by telling them more about the fighters. And I really took it at heart to do this, and I really hope that on the English side of thing, everybody that listened to it had fun and thought that I did good. That would mean a lot to me if I did, and if I didn't, then fuck it, I'm gonna get better next time. But I'm pretty sure I did. So
you did.
I'm gonna need to change my camera battery because it's dying, but it's okay because you're here, Max, and you're gonna tell us about your Samurai experience because it wasn't like mine. But you were still cage side, some of the best seats in the house, and you were able to film some awesome content for the vlog. So tell me more about your experience while I change that shit.
Well, first of all, I bought the pay-per-view, and I've been watching it nonstop since I were back from Ontario. If any of you didn't have the chance to watch the event live, it's still on Fight TV. You can buy the pay-per-view for only $20, and it's 3 hours of good MMA fights and good MMA commentary with John Ramdin and my man Faber Glass. It was one hell of a night. I just did a radio show in French this morning, and I was still buzzing. Smile to my ear. I mean, what a show we had. Pierre Thivierge put on a good show, first fight of the night. We had about 8 French-Canadian fighters, and 5 of them won. 2 losses, so we had 7 French-Canadian guys. It was amazing. First time MMA in Montreal since 2 years and a half. I couldn't ask for more. I was cage side with you and Greg. We had one hell of a time, and I can't wait to talk about the fights.
For sure. Let's do it right now. Main event. Karl Prepelec, Michael Dufort. Michael Dufort only knows how to do 2 things. and that's either a first round finish by submission or an absolute fucking crazy war that goes the distance and ends up in a split decision. Fortunately for us, we had the latter. We had the crazy ass stupid war. And that's one thing I want to say about that samurai card. It's like there were so many hurdles, so many things happening, like to basically prevent this event from happening, like either from the commission side to like just the government side with the vaccine passports and all that stuff. So like everything was going in motion for this event not to happen. And not only it happened, but like I've rarely seen an event that delivered in that fashion. The two main events, that two title fights were like absolutely amazing. We would probably be buzzing about Morgan versus Amo if it wasn't for the main event, which probably was the fight of the year in the country. And before that, we're going to speak about it, but La Douleur came through and we had Tania Gavrilovich back in the cage and he did some absolute madness. So not only the event happened, but like it couldn't have happened better. The main events, every fight on the card delivered, and like it went up and up and up. And at every time we were like, oh man, we like that Strania knockout was crazy. We've seen the best of this card, and then whoa, the other thing happening after was even better, then even better, and it ended on such high note. It was amazing. But as for the fight, man, I feel like, and I don't feel, I know that Dufault is not taking this loss too well. He believed that he had done enough to win the decision. It's a really close decision, to be quite honest. I don't really mind for who you score it. The fifth round was razor thin, but it's one of the first time in my life that I have seen a fight that was basically decided in the last second. We often say that like as a saying, as an expression, but in that case, it was real, basically. Prepelec came out really good, was able to first of all, to shut down Dufault's wrestling and shut down his guillotine attempts, 100% shutting him down. There were no like good tries for Dufault. He wasn't even able to secure the position that could lead to those type of attempts. So that's the first thing he done very well. And when Dufault was kind of stuck on the feet, he was trying to rush Cal Prepelec to make the fight dirty. And Prepelec was able, with his slick striking, to counter really hard, hit him in the head flush twice with some head kicks. And basically was winning the fight in the two first rounds. And we were saying, damn, Dufault needs to turn this around. But I feel like at the second that Dufault accepted that he wasn't going to be able to grapple that guy, he just said, fuck it, I'm going to go all in on the striking. And he really started putting his feet down and putting power in his punches and throwing punches and bunches, trying to trap Prepelec against the cage. And as the fight was advancing, it was really getting to Prepelec more and more, so much that Dufault clearly won round three, clearly won round four, even had some really good moments in these rounds where he was, like I said, putting Prepelec's back against the cage and just trapping him there and going with flurries of punches. And Prepelec had to survive that tough stress. And then the fifth round, as I remember from the broadcast, me and John basically were given that round to Dufault up until the final minute, where it really got super, super close, because Prepelec kind of put the pace up, really recognized that it was the end of the fight, that and he needed to do something special. And like I said, basically in the final second of the fight, Prepelec was able to pick Dufault up with a huge takedown and basically slam him on the ground. And he wasn't able to gain no control or anything from that, but it was a high impact move. As the bell rang, that was the freshest thing in the minds of the judges. And two out of three judges gave the final round to Prepelec, giving him the belt. And like an amazing performance, because the things that Prepelec needed to do to win that fight, he did them. He needed to shut down the grappling. We've seen him having trouble in the UFC with takedown defense and that stuff. And we know that Prepelec, if he could just stand with somebody, he's basically going to beat everybody. So he was able to not get taken down and to have an amazing game plan. And like he really deserved that win. It was an amazing win for him. And as for Dufault, yeah, he's not really a loser. Like, I know he's feeling it, and he was so close to the UFC and so close to his first professional belt. I know it stings, but like in the end, it was an amazing fight, and I feel like he could grow to love that performance sometimes. It's sure that right now it stings him, because he really wanted that belt and he really wanted to to win the first Samurai main event in front of all the people that came to see him. But what you're gonna do? It's not gonna be this time, but it's gonna happen in the future. I feel like Triple H showed that he should have never got cut from the UFC, and by default, the fight being so competitive, Dufault just showed that he was UFC level too. So that's what I had to say about that. What about you? What are your thoughts on that main event?
Yeah, you're right. Everywhere. I mean, the buzzer beater takedown from Triple H won him the fight. That's for sure. It was a great fight. He started so well in the first and the second. He was piecing up Mikael on the feet. Great counter punches from Triple H. I was very impressed by Mikael too. I mean, I was expecting a ground fight, so him doing his thing, jiu-jitsu or like submission threat and everything. But Triple H was so good to take that, to defense every attack from Mikael. So when, like you said, Mikael realized that it was going to be a kickboxing fight, he tuned up. And a word that you and John used a lot during the broadcast, it was craziness. Mikael's craziness was winning him the fight until the buzzer beater takedown. So it was one hell of a fight. I'm very happy for Triple H. He deserves it. Of course, I would have liked Mikael to win the belt, but I was very happy to see a performance like that from him. I didn't know his striking was that good from Dufault. Triple H is one hell of a striker. So yeah, good W for both guys in my book. Mikael is going to be back, and Daniel told you that he was working really hard to put him on a contender series fight next summer. So good things, only good things for Mikael.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, it's cool to see that basically striking has become one of the biggest tools in Dufault's game. I'd say probably his third or fourth best tool. His first one is submission game for sure. I think it's fair to say that second and third best tools for Dufault is chin and cardio. Now, chin is unbelievable.
The, chin and the head kicks that he took.
Yes, yeah, nobody should have survived this, and he took plenty of them. And yes, he was wobbled at times, but always stayed up, always kept on fighting, kept on defending himself. It was at no point in the fight he was close to being finished, even though he ate those hellacious strikes. But striking has really become his best tool after the chin cardio and pure jiu-jitsu submission grappling. But I think it's fair to say that a little bit like Triple H in his UFC run, like we clearly know what Dufault has to improve, and it's his wrestling. He's so much of a good guy on the ground, so dangerous. If only he could have a little more wrestling to be able to take these fights down when he needed to, it would make him like by far the most dangerous fighter in that division. He's finished everybody he's won against, so he's already one of the most dangerous guys. But the only thing he needs to work on, that he should focus on, is his wrestling. I know he was focusing heavy on striking in his recent camps. It's really showing, the work that Nathan Roy has been doing with him. It's really showing. And I feel like now, not time to abandon his striking training. Now he needs to keep on improving there too. But maybe include a little more wrestling in his training, because that's really in his Ronson fight and his Prebelec fight. If only he had a little more wrestling in these fights, he would absolutely have won these contests, I believe. So
yeah.
So for Prebelec, you know, that was the kind of knock on him coming from the UFC. He had to improve that. He improved it in this fight. And now it's time for Dufault to improve something in his game and show us next fight that he's taking care of business and that he's ready to become a new fighter and learn from this defeat, because he's still so close, like we've been saying. He's UFC level. He just needs to rack up a couple wins again, and he's going to be there soon enough. And for Triple H, fuck, get him back right now. This guy should have never left the UFC.
Yeah, high caliber fight we had Friday, the main event. Oh, my God. Both guys deserve to be in a bigger league.
For sure, for sure.
Even though I love Samurai.
Yeah, no, I'd watch Cal Prebelec and Mikhail Dufault fight each other 20 more times. I don't care, but yeah, like these guys, they need to move on for sure. And like, just how like, can you not? Yeah,
go just ahead. Like the other guy we're gonna talk about in a moment.
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure. The other guy needs to get the fuck out of here, probably earlier than these people. But yeah, as for Prebelec too, it's just really tough not to be happy for him. You know, I mentioned it almost everywhere. I even said it to him and to this coach. Mikhail Dufault, it's well known. He's my friend. He's one of my good friends in life and stuff. But listening to that fight, listening to everything that happened before the fight, and with all the interactions I had with Cal Prepelic, he's been on my podcast twice now. This guy is amazing. This guy is so cool, so like calm, and never says a word like louder than the other. He's just the real gentleman that everybody loves, that's so soft-spoken, so nice in life in general. And like, we've got some characters in that sport. We've got some weird people, and it's just refreshing to see a guy like Cal Prepelic being such a gentleman, such a good person in life. And it's always cool to see these people have success.
Yeah, he even learned a few French words for us guys. So I can't say enough good things from Cal Prepelic.
Nah, he's the man, and we're really happy for him. Dan, you were talking about it, Alex Morgan, Majed Amo. Major props to Majed Amo. Like first of all, because we're gonna speak a lot about Alex Morgan now. That's kind of the name of the game. But major props to Majed Amo. We knew that he was that type of fighter. I've never seen a boring fight from that guy, and it's because he's a fighter. And even though it's not going well, he still fights and he still tries, and he had some good submission attempts in that fight. He really did his all to survive the Alex Morgan storm in this fight. And like, he couldn't because of the super well-placed body punch in the fourth round. But Amo is a real fighter, is a guy that won the hearts of many fans with his performance back in Montreal. And I just got to give him major props before we just go on and talk about how Alex Morgan is probably one of the best fighters pound for pound in the country.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, man. The guy is the 145 king in Quebec and Canada, all over the damn country, from west to east. He's the best. Alex Morgan deserves to be in a bigger league. He called the Dana White. He said F word, Dana White. I don't know if you get that on the broadcast, so I don't know how Dana is gonna find that. But he deserves to be there for sure. What a technical fighter! So good. Improved his submission threat defense. We all know he got finished by Charles Jourdain with the same thing that Amo almost finished him in the first round, but he got out of that. Two submission threat, got out of that, and then he controlled the fight from A to Z.
Oh, yeah, and his jab is amazing. Is right hand is... Like, to be honest, I don't know if I saw one right hand land somewhere else than on the temple and on the chin. It was so precise, and his right hand was lightning quick. The release on it was absolutely amazing for a 145er of his size. He looked like a monster in the cage. He looked way bigger than his opponent, and he was still by far the faster fighter and the hardest hitting fighter, and the way that he was setting everything up with his jab, like we know him to do. That's some classic Alex Morgan shit that we saw in that fight. But like you said, with the added wrinkle of the submission defense, to be able to get on top, land a couple takedowns here and there, get on top and be careful on top, but still score some points, do some damage there. And when the fight got back up, of course, he continued his striking clinic. But really good all-around performance from Alex Morgan, who, like, he just needs to leave. He can't fight here anymore. First, nobody wants to fight him. Majed Amo was probably the only fucking guy in the country that wanted him to fight him. He's been to France earlier this year. I don't think that people who saw him there are probably, they're not like lining up to fight him either. Like, there's no line at the door for Alex Morgan. Nobody wants to fight this guy. So please to get him somewhere where people are going to be willing to fight him, because that's another guy who deserves it.
Yeah, he is a complete fighter for sure. On the feet, on the ground, wrestling's good. This guy's a top fighter, top player in the game. I can't wait to see him in the bigger league. I'm sure we're going to see him. He's done with the regional fights. He's going home. He's going to the UFC.
For sure. And then, La Douleur. 50 seconds of pure insanity. Strania Gavrilovic had all kind of problems, like legal problems, personal problems. Everything went pretty much wrong in the last few years for that guy, but he was able to resolve all these situations and better his life, better his legal situation. He was able to obtain his license finally after going to court against the commission, and it was comeback for him, comeback season, and he came in ready. He came in super prepared, super in shape, and you know that he's able to be a technical fighter, but the, like he say, he probably says it the best. He's such a good speaker. He always finds the words to describe thing and like mark the minds of people with the stuff that he says. But he told us that like the werewolf within him, sometimes it just takes over and he can't control it. And that's what we saw in that fight, because he started it and trying to get a jab out there and do some stuff. And Bosuku came in swinging with the hooks and the werewolf took over and was like, oh, we're going to trade hooks. Let's see who falls first. And they traded hooks. Of course, it wasn't Strano who fell first because he never falls. And when the guy fell to the ground, he basically double hammer fisted him in the face, like flying Donkey Kong punch. It was absolutely insane. And then went on to scream at every camera in his face, come scream at me and John, then screamed at Pat Leno during the interview, called out Steve Bussey, told him to buy himself some balls on Wish so that they could fight, and then blasted every promoter saying that he was fighting for the money. Now he wasn't fighting for the sport anymore. And it ended up, like, to be honest, amazing co-main event, even more amazing main event. But when we traveled to BTC the day after, the only thing we were talking about is La Douleur and Strania Gavrilovic and all the shenanigans that implied his presence. So, man, it was the surprise for the fans after all the hurdles, after all that happened. Samurai was working hard to put him on the card as a surprise, as a gift for the fans. And, man, we couldn't get a better gift.
Oh, yeah. He told and showed everyone that in his DNA, there's not only blood, there's pain, violence, and douleur.
For sure, man. He's the master of la douleur.
And shout out to Bosuku, man, who came from France and got obliterated by Gavrilovic and still left the cage with a half of a smile on his face. And he was happy to be there, too. It was an experience for him, too. So shout out, Bosuku.
Yeah, for sure, man. A real warrior. Like, you gotta be a crazy motherfucker to plant your feet in front of Strania and swing hooks. And the fucking guy did it. So we gotta give him all our praise. He's an absolute madman.
This was a car accident. Like, if there is ever a fight that looks like a car accident, that was one.
Absolutely. They just crashed into each other. It was absolutely insane. Then, let's go to... I feel like... We can say there were two portions to that card.
Yeah.
Like the main event, talent, established fighters. That was one portion. The other portion was like more prospect oriented. More.
It was the prelim and the main card. The three first fights were the main card and the three other ones.
And let's say that the main event of the prelims was the return of Frédéric Dupraz, one of Quebec's brightest prospect, an absolute killer on the ground, H2O MMA prospect. And he suffered a big knockout loss in his last fight. That was three and a half years ago, like middle of 2018, basically. And he was able to fight until last night, until Friday night, because of the pandemic, because he took time after that knockout to of course make sure that everything's good before he steps back into the cage, because he's still a young man and like you don't want to like sacrifice your career because you came back too quick after a knockout like that. It was a really, really bad knockout. Really bad knockout. But came back, was able to take Patrick Connors down, was really smothering on top, had some, I won't say some problems with his guard, because I think it was expected that Patrick Connors with his 6'1" frame at featherweight, that's what he does on the ground. He's just like bugging you with his legs. He's got legs and that's his game, having legs. And it's a really good jiu-jitsu game when you're on bottom just to have legs to be there. But Connors was trying some missions, was doing what he had to do, not to absolutely get dominated by Dupraz. And Dupraz was able to capitalize on the triangle attempt to pass the guard. And from now on, he just choked him with a side choke, not from the side, basically. But we all know Frédéric Dupraz, legendary guillotine. And I felt it before. I felt this guillotine before. And it's really efficient because of the squeeze. This guy is super strong, super physical, and he's able to squeeze from almost every position. And that choke, even though it wasn't a guillotine, really showed us like the extent of his squeeze, because like you can't really finish people with a side choke, not from the side, and he fucking did it.
Yeah, that looked painful a lot for Connors. And props to him, he tried to defend it. It wasn't an automatic tap. even though the squeeze was really hard, he tried to get out of it, couldn't, tapped. Good win for Frédéric, who only had fought like a minute and 15 seconds with the three fight combined. So this fourth fight went 2 minutes 50, almost 3 minutes only for this fight. So he doubled his cage time. So I'm very happy for Frédéric. We know him personally. He's a good guy. He finished Connors. He wasn't happy about Connors missing weight, even though it was not Connors' fault because the weigh-in got pushed a little bit early than it was supposed to. But Frédéric came in the cage with violence in his head, and he put Connors down in the first seconds of the fight. I was expecting them to exchange on the feet a little bit. It didn't happen. Frédéric took him down quite easily, worked his way up, and then finished the fight with a good choke. So yeah, really happy for Frédéric. Patrick Connors is good too. We're gonna see him back for sure in the Samurai. But good win for Frédéric. We're gonna see him on the top of the cards coming in the few next events. So it is a name to remember, Fred Duprat.
Yeah, for sure. And as for the weigh-in, like you said, I asked. I asked Patrick Connors, and like he just wasn't aware that the weigh-in was at 10.
Yeah.
Until they told him the weigh-ins now, we're waiting for you. You got the weigh-in now. So the guy, yeah, he missed weight, but he missed weight by 1.8 pounds. And basically was on pace to make him wait 4:12, which was the established time of the weigh-in before the commission switched it all around, basically twice, because they said, okay, we're going to do the weigh-ins at 10, and then we're going to do the medicals after. And then everybody was there on weight at 10, except for, weirdly enough, the English fighters. Like, the only guys that weren't there were... oh, man, I'm going to say something stupid right now, but were Majed Amo, Patrick Connors, and where Noah Crosswell, where you at, Noah, man? I think we heard that before. Where's Noah? Where is he at? I don't know. Who knows? I think let's say like that. He'd probably put an end to his career by not showing up. But congrats on your 0-1 career, Noah. That's the way to go, my man. I don't think promoters are going to be lining up to book you now, but that's some bullshit. But let's say like that. I think like maybe the info didn't go across well for the across well for the English fighters, and that's just sad for Pat Connors, who had to relinquish a percentage of his purse because of basically an error in the way in the, like a miscommunication, let's say like that, in the weigh-in procedure.
But the guy showed up, seems really prepared, wasn't probably expecting Frédéric to shoot on him in the very first moment of the fight. That's what he did, that's why he won. I'm excited to see Connor again in the cage. I'm sure he can show us way more than he did Friday.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, Duprat is the type of guy to try to swing on you so you shoot, then choke you. He's not the guy that used to shoot that much on his opponent. So yeah, there was a surprise factor. Even though like he was facing a grappler, it was expected that Duprat was going to try to choke him out. But to see Duprat being super aggressive with the takedown, that was a new wrinkle.
Great fight from Duprat.
Yeah, really. Then Guillaume Fortier, Maxime Poulain, I expected a grapple fest out of that one. In the end, that's kind of what we get, but super one-sided. And I'm not even blaming Guillaume Fortier here, to be quite honest. We've just got a guy who haven't fought in 11 years and who's a police officer, who has a family with some children and who's teaching jiu-jitsu. And like, yes, he's been able to train properly for that fight. That's not what I'm saying, but like the guy has to make more sacrifices than the normal 20-something fighter who's not really working or working a job that's pretty much built around his training. And that's not the case with Guillaume Fortier. And if he's working some day shifts and he can only train at night and he's got no partners at night to train, that's going to be the way that it's going to be, because he doesn't really have control over that stuff. You know, when you work for the police, especially in Quebec City, the second biggest city in the province, in the pandemic, too, where you got to have more people because they need to enforce the curfew and all these stuff that were happening. So just a tough situation for him to fight Maxime Carcajou, who's an active fighter and an amazing grappler and now a black belt, because after his first round submission one, he received his black belt from Firas Zahabi. So just a domination for Poulin. Tough matchup for Forcier. I'm happy to see Forcier back. He's the type of guy that's really fighting for the love of the game. Not, he's not trying to get to the other level. He's got so much going on in his life already. And to see and these sure guys...
Now he's super hungry for a win.
Yeah, exactly. For sure. Now he wants to win. He wants to prove that, like, this was some bullshit and that he can do better than that. And for Poulin, if you want to move up in the rankings and in the mind of people, that's the way to do it. Just handle people like that in the first round. And I don't think there's nothing much to say about it. This guy is an amazing grappler. Don't go on the ground with Maxime Poulin because he's smothering too. He's not like the, oh, I get you on the ground and I'm everywhere spinning and shit. And now, oh, I got a submission. He's a smothering grappler. He's going to try to flatten you and land some ground and pound so that you give your neck. So it's, even though he beats you in 2 minutes, it's like a very, very bad 2 minutes to injure.
Heavy pressure.
Yep. And then an amazing way to begin this event, Pierre Thivierge, Yacine Nasri. Once again, we're going to speak a lot about Pierre here, but before, I just want to give some props to Yacine. Came in ready. I feel like it was kind of bluffing us. Like, oh, I'm a grappler, I'm a jiu-jitsu fighter, I started jiu-jitsu and then I went on to MMA, and like his only available fight was a role in the gym with another guy. So we were thinking about like, oh, this guy's going to be a good grappler, and just comes in with the clinch strikes, the elbows, the knees. He had amazing Muay Thai, was bouncing on his feet really well. So clearly a really, really comfortable striker. I feel like he was trying to play the game a little bit here, but we figured him out now. He's an amazing fighter. And no, he didn't win the fight because Pierre was just amazing with his takedown and his pressure. Nasri was not accepting any positions, but Pierre just kept on grinding and just forced him to accept these positions in the end. And it started as a very competitive fight and ended up pretty much as a beating because Thivierge just beat the will out of that guy.
Yeah, you know, it was that type of fight that whenever Thivierge was taking Nasri down, you knew it was going to stay there for a couple of minutes. Pierre was way heavier than Yacine, who showed us great, great, great striking and good jiu-jitsu defense too, because Pierre wasn't going to submit him, but he won the fight with control and like pressure and good ground and pound from Thivierge too. But on the feet, Nasri was outstanding. Even Greg loved him as a fighter, so I can't wait to see Nasri again. But Pierre showed us his toughness, because a lot of fighter would have given up with the first round beating that he was taking on the feet, but he stayed there. It was the very first fight of the night, the very first fight in Montreal for like 2 years and a half, so he probably had a lot of stress and jitters. His family is there. He kept his calm, took the shot. We saw him after the fight. He was a little bit bruised up, but he won the fight and he was really happy with his performance.
Yes, for sure. Amazing performance. And like you said, the first fight since like May of 2019, and that card was in Gatineau. So we were 47, TKO 47 was in Montreal. So April 2019, since we had MMA in Montreal. So Pierre had like the huge task on his shoulder to kick back, to kick off the new era of MMA, the samurai MMA era. And like in the end, amazing event. It was like the prediction value. That's one thing I want to talk about too that we didn't talk about in the beginning. There was always going to be some comparisons or some with TKO, you know, because TKO was the league in Quebec, was the best league in Canada, was like amazing to watch, amazing to look at the money that was spent into the TKO promotion. That's enormous amounts of money. So there was always going to be people trying to compare Samurai and TKO. And fortunately, Samurai just hired the same producer, the same guy that did the TKO shows. That's the guy in his team. That's the guy that they took. His name is Eric Pedneau. He's basically a legend in Quebec. He was doing the Montreal Canadiens game. And like as sport producer, he's one of the top dogs in the game. And he was really able to make this event look so good on TV, on Fight TV. As you said, you've watched the broadcast. I've rewatched the broadcast too because I wanted to see my face. And like it looked good. The production value was amazing. The way that the venue was set up with the lighting and stuff, it really looks super professional. And like to make a segue, but we're going to go to some Manscaped before we talk about BTC, but just to make a segue between the two, and I don't want to knock BTC at all because it was a super good event too. We're going to recap it right now, but like it looked so much different. Like you can see the BTC first, it was in a bigger arena, about 3,000 capacity, and like there was never going to be much more than 1,000 to 1,500 people in that crowd. So it was cool, but to be in the big arena with less people and a darker, let's say, not mood, but lighting and stuff. And like the way that the arena floor is really high. So you need to have like super costing equipment value to be able to make the lighting crazy and all that stuff. So it was more somber, more dark, like you're used to see from your regional events on Fight Pass. Like I feel like what we saw from BTC, that's the norm. What Samurai did, that's outside of the norm. That's a super highly produced, good-looking broadcast that probably cost so much money to Daniel and the producers, but like the feedback was amazing. The fights turned out to be absolutely crazy. I think we couldn't have asked for a better night for the return of MMA in Quebec.
No, definitely the greatest night of the year in Montreal for sure.
Yep. Let's go to some Manscaped before we talk about BTC. Support for the MMA Talk Show is brought to you by Manscaped, the champions of the world in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels, and they just launched their fourth-generation trimmer, the Lawnmower 4.0. You heard that right, the 4.0. Join over 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you. That's 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code MMATALK at manscaped.com. Just imagine shaving with a sleek, well-designed, and optimized trimmer that makes shaving time your favorite time in the bathroom. I'm one of the first people to try the new 4.0, and I'm blown away by the performance, the craftsmanship, and details on the 4.0 is next level. And when you're a fighter, you gotta have some balls. Whether you train MMA, boxing, or jiu-jitsu, you will experience times where you just need to grab your balls and power through. Your balls will always be there for you, but who's there for your balls? For me, it's Manscaped. They allow me to take care of my balls and make sure that they are in their best shape at all time, because I never know when I might need them. With the help of Manscaped, I can now be confident that my balls look good, smell good, and are always ready to help me attain peak performance in combat sport. Manscaped engineered the ultimate groin and body trimmer by focusing on intelligent functionality and an incredibly comfortable grooming experience. Their fourth generation trimmer features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin-safe technology. I now feel confident shaving my boys. This upgraded trimmer also includes a multi-function on and off switch that can engage a travel lock. It also gives you the ability to turn the 4000K LED spotlight on and off when needed for a more precise shave. The Lawnmower 4.0 even allows you to customize your trim to additional guard lengths with sizes 1 through 4. Didn't I even mention the wireless charging? This new wireless charging system uses electromagnetic induction, which can help battery last longer. Man, if you've been using the same nut trimmer on your face for years, you've been doing it wrong. Nobody wants to end up with pubes in their mouths. That's why it's time for you to get your own ball air and body trimmer with Manscaped to make me time the best time and enhance your confidence with some nice, smooth boys. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code MMATALK at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code MMATALK. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped. Your balls will thank you. Fuck yeah, balls. Thank you, Manscaped. You're the man. We love you guys. Let's talk about BTC.
Oh yeah, baby.
Great night too in St. Catharines, Ontario. Very far away from home. But we were there and we were happy. And I'm glad to have you here, Max. I'll tell you, this is probably your main use for the podcast because like you saw me at that event, or you didn't see me at that event because I was just everywhere trying to speak to the most possible people for the vlog. And basically, I've looked at the fights here and there, but there's many fights that I basically don't have a fucking clue of what happened. So that's why I have you here, because you were there with me and I know you watched the fights. But first one of the night is one that I watched because I was really interested in Binaebi Otoru, a guy from a House of Champion, Krualin, with we've seen many fighters from there over the years, many UFC level fighters still in this gym. So I was really interested because Otoru had lost his only two fights, but it was to really high competition. He lost to the homie Louis Jourdain in TKO in his first fight. So only lost to really good fighter, Nate Ledger too. It was 0-2, but lost to good fighters. And I feel like it was really a tale of, like, a little bit like Morgan Amo, the technical striker trying to keep his range and be calm and collected and land the better strikes. Again, the guy that was trying to make it dirty, to make it an ugly fight where they were close range and hitting each other. And basically it didn't work until like the final second of the fight, when Nate Ledger almost knocked Binaebi Otoru out. Like, honestly, there was 10 more seconds and maybe Nate Ledger had just won that fight, but there wasn't 10 more seconds and Otoru had clearly won, let's say, almost all of the fight. But it's tough not to give that third round to Ledger because of the damage he did at the end. So won almost all the fight up until then, and that means he got away with the decision here.
Yeah, there was a bit of a Diaz Edwards feeling when Ledger really like shook Otoru with a good right, if I remember, and then Otoru went in the cage and wasn't completely there. But Ledger maybe took this approach a little bit late in the fight. A great showing from Otoru, the Nigerian nightmare, who showed up to fight, showed up with a good IQ. He knew what he had to do to win, and he did it. So, yeah, it was a good fight to start the night for sure.
Yes, and then we had the chance to see two professional debuts, stuff that we can't do in Quebec. I don't know why, but two professional debuts. And one was kind of highly anticipated. It was Cody Chovancek, and he really delivered. There was, I'd say, some moments here and there where Martinuk was able to come out with some power and not really hurt to Chovancek per se, but like make him think about it and make him like react to his shots. But like the story of the fight was really Chovancek striking. He was able to really get the edge over his opponent and even to finish him before the end of the fight at 3:06 of the third round. So real impressive stuff from the guy from Niagara Top Team, the first Niagara Top Team fighter on the card. And it was a win for him. And as you will see, it was pretty much wins all around for Niagara Top Team. It was really their night. They won that night by far. And the first guy to get the ball rolling for them was Cody.
Yeah, I'm interested to see Chovancek again for sure. Good on Martinuk. I mean, first pro fight, it's for sure not easy. Got it last, my man, but keep going. And I'm sure we'll see you win in the future.
Of course, and then we were moving on to the tournament, the Bantamweight tournament, where people are fighting for $10,000. It was the quarterfinals. And like, honestly, that's the thing that interested me the most on that card. That's the thing I want to see, because every guy, I'd say except one in that bracket, was a prospect, was a guy with few professional fights, but a guy that like we've had our eyes on, we wanted to see more of them. And like, I really like the way that they put this together, because the guy that's going to win this tournament is going to become like one of the best prospects in the country and one of the most well-regarded prospects, because you got to be a good prospect, but you also need people to know. And I feel like winning that type of tournament is going to be good for helping people get to know you. And one of the first guys that's like a shoo-in for the finals is Albara Atme. That's one fight I missed. I don't know if you can tell me more, but I know that this basically didn't last that long against Seth Connor.
No, sure. One pro fight only for Atme, but it didn't show it. It showed that him and his brother fight a lot outside of the cage, because he looked like a very seasoned fighter. Seth Connor really got like overwhelmed with Atme's striking. His wrestling is very good too. Put his opponent on the ground and controlled him right away with a vicious ground and pound. I don't know if I've seen more heavy ground and pound than that in live show. It was very amazing. The Atme brother are something to look out for sure. And no, the ground and pound was just too much. for said Connor. If I remember well, this is the fight that I almost thought like the guy was out with the elbows. He wasn't. The fight was stopped on time. But yeah, vicious ground and pound from Atme.
Yeah, these brothers, we're going to talk about Izu in a little bit, but these fucking brothers, man, they're crazy. Then a guy that is pretty much, I'd say, because the Atme brothers, they're from Calgary. They're like, they're out of town guys. So if you're taking the pulse in Ontario and you're talking to people and they're asking, hey, who's winning that tournament? The guy that people are talking about is Vinny Diaz. That's the man. He's an amazing grappler, and he showed it against Sosa. Was put into some spots here and there where Sosa was able to sweep or reverse the position and have some good moments on the ground. But ultimately, Vinny was the better grappler, and he was able to get a submission win early in the second round to advance in the tournament and really like show us that he can go through some hardships in the fight and still be dominant, maintain his favorite status, and like a really good showing for Vinny here.
Oh, yeah, man. And you saw in the crowd that this guy is the local legend. The crowd went wild when he went in. So I'm sure he's a good guy to look on for the rest of the tournament for sure.
Yep. And then a guy that's never the favorite. Even in that fight, he wasn't. And he wasn't winning either. But Ariel Zuniga, if you need to know one thing about that guy, is that he's one of the craziest motherfuckers out there. And like I asked him, man, you're a fucking madman. Why do you always end up in these type of fights, man? Because every time, the only time it wasn't like an all-out crazy war, it was still a good back-and-forth fight. But he fought Tishay Gautreaux, which we're going to talk about. And you know Tishay is a super fucking dominant top-level prospect. So it was a tougher fight, let's say like that, for Ariel. But his Gillespie fight was the fight of the year in 2018, if I remember. And then once again against Arlie King, was able to survive some real bad positions, some real submission attempts. And early in the third round, he caught him in a standing guillotine and torqued it like to death, basically, and was able to secure the tap. And like an amazing comeback victory. And once again, an amazing fight. And like he said, people keep trying to kill me and I just don't want to die. And he's not dying, Ariel Zuniga. And he's the guy in the tournament that, like, you've got some favorites. You've got the little phenoms, the brothers, they're amazing. But you've got here the real live underdog that it's not going to be favored against any of these guys. Let me tell you, we're not going to favor him against the brothers. We're not going to favor him against Vinny Diaz. But he's the guy that could come out of nowhere in the third round and knock your ass out or submit you out of nowhere and just fucking win it, because he's never really supposed to win. And he still does almost every time.
Oh, yeah. This was definitely one of my favorite fight on the card. Crazy guy, Zuniga. He comes to fight. He comes to give a show. Submission threat, and on the feet, oh my god, he can punch his opponent. And good on Arlie King. I mean, like I said, this was one of my favorite fight to watch from this night. We were very tired because of everything that just happened in Montreal and the road, and this really woke my ass up. It was one hell of a fight. Great finish, good respect from both guys after the fight. What a war, man. I can't wait to see Zuniga again. He really got my heart for sure.
Oh, Zuniga's my guy, man. And then Izzudin Atme, the other brother, against Nate Small. And the other brother, it was 1-1 at loss. And like, you know, Jake Gauvreau, the guy from New Era on Ottawa, another guy that never fought as an amateur, like Matteo Vogel. I don't know why Crew Jeff keeps doing that, but he finds those fucking, like, guys that are 19 years old that have never had a fight in their life, and he's like, okay, let's just fight pro, just skip the amateurs, and these fucking guys just come out and beat Izzudin Atme. They're like, so the fact that the brothers are having such success just really goes to show how crazy good it is Jake Gauvreaux, even though the fucking guy is so young. It's incredible. But Izu, after losing his debut, now two amazing performances in a row, a knockout over Isaiah Medituk, and now a less than 2 minutes in submission of Nate Small. Man, like, what are we going to say? I try to even compare them and say, oh, Albaro is more impressive than him. Not at all. These two guys, these two brothers, they're just fucking problems, man.
They are, man. And Nate Small is not an easy opponent. We've seen him at BTC 12, won his fight, a grueling fight like a war, and then he got choked out by Atme in less than 2 minutes. That shows how Atme is good. He saw the finish was there and he took it. Just like his brother, they're too much for their opponent. They give like a lot of strikes in a few moments. And like, I mean, he controlled Small, put him on the ground, heavy pressure, choked him out. I mean, what can we say more from the Atme brothers? Unless that we can't wait to see them again.
Yep. Are they gonna like? What's your predictions now? Because it's pretty clear that Izzedine is fighting either Ariel, or our homie Vinny.
Yeah.
And Alvaro's fighting the other guys. Like, do you think that there's a chance that we see those brothers fighting in the finals? And do you think that they're gonna fight each other?
Yeah, for sure. I believe it. I think it's going to be a warrior scenario. And these two signed the dots on the contracted line because they knew they might fight each other. And I'm sure they're willing to. I'm sure they love each other, but they're fighters. And yeah, I believe that we're going to see them fight in the final.
Damn. Have you ever seen a brother versus brother fight? I've never seen that in my life.
No, but I'm waiting to see one. And this might be the first one ever.
That's some rough and rowdy type shit, but like with good fighters, like not some stupid sideshow. Like, you are two fat twins. We're going to fight each other for Barstool. Let's fight.
I don't wish they fight. I wish one of them win the final for sure. But hey, we don't know what's coming. I think I put Ariel versus Izzedine and I put Vinny against Albara and we see what's going to happen.
Rob told me which one is going to be fighting which one, but I don't even remember. So many things happened since then. But then we had T-Shay Galtro, comeback fight for him after, like, guy went to the LFA on short notice, fought a 5-1 guy while he was like 2-0 or 3-0, and like basically lost a split decision in a fight that, yes, I think he lost clearly. But like, you can't be mad at yourself with that such less experience than the other guy. Just come in and almost beat him. It was an amazing performance. He was back in his hometown here for this fight. And like, I want to have no knock on him, but it wasn't like the best fight of the night by far. But the thing is that I think he had 2 to 3 opponent switches. He had to fight at 145, even though he's a 35er and not the biggest 35er either. I think that at the UFC level, I don't wish that on him, but I think he could cut to 125 possibly if need be. But had to fight a 45er, an undefeated guy. So, of course, he had to take the more patient way, the more prudent way. Like, he didn't want to go out there and just get his ass beat in front of his hometown because he wanted to go crazy on a guy that was good and that was coming into fight, and that was, you know, the short notice aspect, and there were so many changes, so many hurdles that I don't want to blame T-Shay for. And it was a good performance. It was just it was a workman-like performance. He didn't come here to do some crazy stuff and do an enormous show for the fans. He came in to get back in the win column, get his paycheck, win in front of his people. And that's exactly what he did. And we can't blame him for that. But like, it's sure that when you compare this to all the action that we had in the tournament's bouts and the Cody bout, and it wasn't not one of the best fight of the evening for sure, but still an amazing performance for T-Shay, who's one of the better prospects in Canada, and that I can't wait to see on the full camp with not an opponent change, with like a more normal circumstance, let's say like that.
Yeah, the guy looks very complete. He can fight everywhere. He has good ground techniques as well as good striking techniques. So yeah, T-Shay Goodrow is for sure someone to look out in the future.
Yep. And the other thing is that he's a striker, T-Shay. Like, at art, this guy's a striker, and we've really seen in his last fight trying to wrestle a little more. So I know he's still a prospect. He's so young in his career. So he's really trying to round out his game, make sure that he can do everything, and that when it's a fight that he believes that he could win easier on the ground, he just goes there and wins it easily on the ground. So yeah, it's cool to see these prospects trying to fight outside of their games early in their career. So it just shows out the goes out to prove that this guy is just so well-rounded and he understands the game like people don't really understand the game at that level of let's say. Like, he's got 3 or 4 fights, man.
And Bouchard is, it wasn't anybody to look down to. He was 2-0, still undefeated, very good prospect. So good on Goudreau to take the fight like with a little bit of a slow approach. Good fight from both guys.
Yep, and then another ground heavy affair, but one that I liked. Because Gabe Sagman was really on top, trying to secure the positions, and he was a grappler there. He was the black belt. He was the guy that was gonna bring the fight to the ground and dominate there. And Matt Dawson, you know, that's the knock on his game. That's what happened in his last fight in it was BFL, so Vancouver. He got taken down and controlled on the ground, but like, he shouldn't accept the positions. Like, I shouldn't say, oh, yeah, I fuck with that style, because he's accepting positions and he's losing fights because of that. But fuck, man, I can't tell you that I'm not liking a guy on his back just elbowing the shit out of his opponent. And, like, Gabe really clearly won that fight. There's no doubt Sagman is the winner here. But fuck, man, when you were looking at these two guys after, it looked like Sagman got the shit beat out of him. He was super swelled at an eye almost shut. So, like, Matt Dawson, man, fuck, you shouldn't accept positions like that. But I'm not the guy that's going to tell you that I don't like it. I just really like his style. From the guy that's able to, because like we've seen that, I don't want to bring back this the Powell-Dario fight, but like we've seen fights where like Dario is the wrong winner in that fight, but he was the winner because he landed some punches from under. But it was no damage. It was like arm punches and like super, just tough to do stuff. Dawson did some damage in that fight.
Yeah.
That Dawson won a round from his back in that fight. So that's some good work. If only he could accept these positions a little less and be able to get up and strike a little more. And when he's on the ground for some periods, go crazy with your elbows and stuff. Do it, but just don't spend 15 minutes there, because it's still the mentality is still evolving and it's changing a little bit, but you're still not usually going to win a fight that you spend that much time under.
Nah, this guy is definitely vicious on his feet and on his back. He just likes to fight, you know. Even after the fight, he knew he had lost. He was very happy. And it just showed to me how good Gabe Sagman, and we knew he was good at wrestling and like pressuring his opponent, but like he was getting pieced up by Dawson on the feet, and he didn't wait too long before he wrestled Dawson, put him on the ground, won the fight clearly with his pressure, with his control. And Sagman was really messed up after the fight. He got cut up very bad, and he told us that Dawson clipped him in the very first minutes of the fight. So it just showed to me the art of the samurai segment and like his control, his fight IQ. The guy is very good. Climbed up to 6'4", which is a very good fish. It's a good record. Dawson, I honestly can't wait to see Dawson fight again. I like his style. I hope he's going to work a little bit on his like jiu-jitsu and everything. But striking-wise, Dawson is amazing. And good on Gabe Sagman for a great win, tough win. And yeah, can't wait to see those two guys again.
Yeah, for sure. Sagman, he's at the elite level now in the country. And probably both the bantamweights and flyweight division. He's more of a flyweight. I know the cut is disgusting, brutal. Man. He's like, fuck. No man should wear, no adult man should weigh 125 and be LT. That's just completely insane. But he's able to do it. And that's probably the division where he could go on and grab a belt in Canada and really establish his name as like one of the next guys, the next Malcolm Gordon, the next, you know, the next flyweight out of Canada to move up to the next level. And like you said, there are many guys like that. Even though they got good jiu-jitsu, because, yeah, Sagman's a good wrestler, but he's basically a jiu-jitsu guy. That's his stuff. But there's a lot of people that like the top control pressure type of style, and that even though they're really good jiu-jitsu players, sometimes they just get comfortable there and they get caught. They get submitted. They get, even though like James Mancini, that's pretty much his MO. The guy, before he went on his role in TKO, he had a losing record because he basically was winning all his fights until he got submitted from the bottom. And Gabe Sagman is really in everything he does. And that just shows that he's a good black belt, really intelligent grapplers that knows his way around the mats. But like at no point, even though he had a dangerous opponent, he was on top of every dangerous opponent. At no point we saw Sagman like be in any kind of trouble, be in surprised by anything Dawson was doing. Yeah, the punches were landing, were doing damage, but Sagman was eating that damage and still trying to advance, still trying to get the better position. So maybe some people would say that that wasn't the best fight on the card, but I'd beg to differ, man. It wasn't the best for sure. That was Zuniga King by far, but it's a fight that I really enjoyed. I love me some grappling. Sagman is an amazing grappler, and I love those crazy fucking guys who just like don't care about positions and throw elbows from bottom. That's some shit I like. So I really enjoyed that contest.
That might not have been the best fight, but it was the bloodiest fight of the night.
Ah, for sure. The bloodiest fight of the night for sure. Then Xavier Nash against Thomas Glot, who was supposed to fight for Samurai. Well, suppose, like he didn't have a matchup on the card per se, but he was one of the French guys that were targeted to come to fight Samurai if they were able to find a matchup for him, and they weren't. But we know Daniel and Rob Vivers were in close contact because of the proximity of their cards and date. Like, if there were some cancellations, they were able to call each other up and, oh, I just got a cancellation. Okay, I got that guy that I can't book. I'm going to send it over to you. And I know that Samurai were trying to book Dorian Dukai for a while on the Samurai card. They weren't able because nobody fucking wants to fight Dorian Dukai. This guy's a monster. And that's normal. I wouldn't fight Dorian. So I don't blame anybody. The only person I blame is Noah Croswell. What the fuck were you doing, Noah? But yeah, Thomas Glot came, fought Xavier Nash. I think he won the first round with his striking. Yeah. Really surprised Xavier, who's a good striker, to a guy that loves to strike, but a complete fighter in his art. And he was able to secure the takedowns here and get a tough, gritty decision against a freshman who was on short notice, but who was not letting go, who was really trying to win that fight, even though it was kind of overmatched in that one.
Yeah, totally. I loved Glut. I think he showed up well on the feet, and Xavier Nash showed his experience. He has almost twice as much fight as Glut has, and it showed. Grinded the decision, and good on Xavier Nash, put up a win, and good on Tomoglu, short notice fight, co-main event at BTC, probably doesn't speak a word of English, and he was in the middle of Ontario. So that was a good fight on the card too. Decision, maybe sometimes they're boring. This wasn't one. I was on the floor for this one, and I think it was Dorian Dakic, who is a teammate of Xavier Nash, and he was really into the fight. He was shouting at him for for tips and everything, and Nash, you could see Nash listening to him. So, like, he's a very good fighter, Xavier, of course. And he's now 5'4", and I think we're going to see him with a good test in his next fight. And Thomas Glot, I hope we're going to see him at Samurai for sure.
Yep, really good thing. And he really completed the night for Niagara Top Team with Cody 1, Vinny 1, T-Shay 1, Xavier Nash 1. So that's a 4-0 night, which led to the night after, where Anthony Romero also won at Fury FC to make it a 5-0 perfect weekend for. Basically, you know, I'm keeping score of all these contests, of all the Canadian fighters fighting all over the world, and I'm keeping like records for the gym. And with this win of Anthony Romero, they basically surpassed TriStar with the better record as a Canadian gym in 2021. So they got the same number of fights and they got a better record than the TriStar fighters. So if anybody was saying that Niagara Top Team wasn't like one of the premium gyms in the country, I guess we just saw it that night because, yeah, we saw people from that gym fighting, but we didn't see no Zachary Powell. We didn't see no Jasmine. We didn't see no Aaron Jeffery. So not even like the top dogs of that gym were fighting, and they beat the shit out of their competition and really showed that. Like, you can't fuck with Niagara Top Team right now. They're on a roll, and it's well-deserved for Chris Prickett, Matt DiMarcantonio. They're doing such amazing work, and it's showing and it's paying out. And yeah, I won't hide it from you. I love that gym. They're my people. Zachary Powell, Kevin Bastien, they're my homies. And wherever my homies go, these people are my homies too. So shout out to my homies from Niagara Top Team.
Yeah,
for this great, this amazing night, this amazing weekend for them. And then the main event, like, what were we going to say about that? Sarah Kaufman, pioneer, legend. She was fighting Jessie Miele, another top 15 fighter in that division, but a top 15 fighter who was on a two-fight losing streak and who basically didn't have shit for Sarah Kaufman. She won first round ground and pound TKO, like, as simple as it can get. She was able to take the fight down and beat the shit out of her opponent in under 4 minutes. It's just cool to see her, man. She should be in the UFC. She's a like Cal Prabulik. She's a fighter that we shouldn't get to see fighting locally, and we had the chance to, so we're just really thankful about that.
Yeah, she called out Amanda Nunes after her win, so I don't know if we're gonna see that, but Kaufman is still very much motivated to fight, and we can't not like it.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, one of the fighters that I'll never get why she's not in the UFC. She basically had a 1-2 record with a no contest and in 4 fights. That's not a bad record. I don't know what happened there for her not to re-sign, but that's bullshit, and we need her in the UFC right now.
Yeah.
So before we conclude, we spoke a little bit about Anthony Romero. Really good performance for him. 1-2 out of the 3 rounds at Fury FC. Such an intelligent fighter. That he's not named the genius for nothing. Such a like a cerebral fighter. You can really see that. Yeah, GSP is his idol because he really modeled his game around the great Josh Sapiai. Good jab, good takedowns. At all times, just really composed and aware. He's got so much awareness. He always knows, like, in what type of position he is and what that entails, basically. Like, okay, I'm here, so what could happen to me? That could happen, that could happen. And, like, he's working for these things not to happen. And that's another guy that should be in the UFC. The guy beat some guys that are in the UFC right now. He's only lost a split decision to JJ Okanovic, like, recently. And I feel like he should already be in the UFC, so that fight shouldn't have happened at all. But now he's back on his winning ways, and I'll keep pumping his drums, man. This fucking guy needs to be in the UFC. Do something about it, man.
Yeah, good job, Tony, man.
And I know we didn't get to watch the UFC, but did you have the chance to see the Loopy fight a little bit?
No, unfortunately, I'm not going to lie, I did not.
Okay, so what happened?
She won a good fight, but that's pretty much it.
Yeah, so basically what happened is that she was the most physical fighter in that fight. She was doing some good things with her boxing, but once again, as we've seen in the recent Loopy fights, it was really the clinch control against the cage and some takedowns here and there that were really... Loma Lubunmi, I love her. She's a good fighter. She's such a good Muay Thai practitioner, but fuck, she's the smallest 115 by far. Like, you look at all the 115 girls that could do 105, that could make the 105 division in the UFC, and she would probably be one of the smallest amongst them. So it's sure that when you fight Loopy's not that big too, like in terms of height, but she's a thick girl. She's such a muscly girl. She's an explosive and strong fighter, and it's just a really tough matchup for Loma to be able to get out of these bad positions when you've got the really physical fighter clinching you up against the cage and making it rough for you and landing strikes from there. So Loopy beating the record, the previous record for the three fastest fight, I think it was 70 something days, and it was Angela Hill, and she just smashed the record by 30 days almost, as she fought 3 times in 42 days now. So first year in the UFC, and she's already racking up records. So shout out to Loopy. That's my girl. I love her. I love her style.
7-2, man. That's a good record for Loopy.
Yep, and her only loss this year came to the end of a 125 fighter. She moved up a division to fight like a super tall, rangy striker. That was a disgusting style matchup for her. But
yeah, just goes out to she lost a split to Jessica Penne at the beginning of the year too.
Yeah, but that was bullshit. She won.
All right.
Yeah, no, she won the Penne fight. She absolutely won the Penne fight, but then was able to bounce back. The Carolina loss was really her only legit loss in my eyes.
Okay. And even though, like you said, it was like a very short notice fight, not good matchup, right, so she didn't train for that fight. So she's 8-0. Loopy's 8-0.
Oh, yeah, undefeated fighter, Loopy Godinez. So that's it for the podcast. Thanks a lot to Maxime Carabine for taking the time to recap these amazing events with me. And, like, major props to Samurai. best night of my life. I had the chance to be on commentary. That was a dream come true. So, like, I'm not even kidding. Like, it was the best night of my life. It was a thing that I always wanted to do, and I had the chance to do it. And not only to do it, but to do it with an absolute legend like John Ramdean. It was such an honor for me. And then the night after BTC, the driving was tough, man. But we got there and we really enjoyed this great fight night. So
major, you got to give a shout out to Mustafa, man.
Oh, my man.
You didn't mention Mustafa once, man.
Ah, okay. Let's talk about the Mo show. How many times you want me to spend on Mo? This guy's amazing. I could talk to about him all day. At first, I'm really
stylish guy in the place.
Oh yeah, it's tough to be a cowboy, like he said. It's tough to be a cowboy. It's tough to be the Mo show, man. They're hating on this guy. I don't know why, man. They're against him. They don't want him to win, but my man's gonna win. You know it. He's got Cruelin in his corner. He's got Gabe Sagman and his jiu-jitsu teacher. He's rocking the cowboy hats. He's rocking the coats, their leather jackets.
He's rocking his smile, man. He's smiling all the time, this guy.
Oh yeah, and he's having a blast, and he doesn't give a shit about what people have to say about him, man. Like, they could be hating all they want. He doesn't have a shit to give about it. And man, I've said it so many times. This guy, he's a character. Like, he's not only a really talented fighter, but he's a guy with a personality that many people could rally around and say, oh shit, I relate to that guy. I love that guy. He's such a presence when he's there. So, like, you know, it's important in MMA to be a good MMA fighter. And he's got all of that shit covered, like I said, with Cruelin, with all the one of the best gyms in the country who produced the Shane Campbells, the Michael Malotts, the Kyle Nelsons, now the Diana Belbitas there too. They're just amazing. I'm just naming a few there. And so he's got that part covered for sure. And he's got the personality. He's got the appeal, the little something that, when you see this guy, you want to talk to him. You want to know more about him. So amazing, amazing guy.
Yeah.
Real glad to have the chance to meet him finally in person and to go briefly to the after party to give a beer to our main man, Gabe, and just go out there and see them and congratulate everybody from the team. And, you know, man, I told him December 18th at the Tarpsoff event, if they want us to party with them, we're going to do it. We're going to take a room and we're going to stay and fucking hang out with our friends.
We're going to show him how we do it from our beautiful Belle Province. Thanks to BTC, man. That was nice. Next time I promise I'm going to get more sleep. So I'm going to be more into it, but it was very nice. Thank you for the event. Thanks to Samurai, man. Thanks to Faber for inviting me on your show.
It's a pleasure, my man, and it was a pleasure to have you with me to live that, the Samurai event. You did an amazing job with the vlog. I can't wait for... In fact, go check out the vlog, because I'm delaying the podcast this week. It's Thursday. Tuesday is the vlog, and Wednesday is the podcast. The vlog needs to get out. It's so amazing. It needs to get out. So it's already out now. So fuck, go check at it. Go look at it if you haven't yet. And that's it. That's all I got to say, man. Thank you, Max. Thanks to everybody. And next week, we're trying to speak to people again. That was a one-off because we lived like two amazing events. So we needed to take a full hour to speak about those events and about the amazing things that the fighters did and that the promoters did. So that's what we did. But next week, we're back to interviews with your favorite Canadian fighter. So thanks to Max. Thanks to you for watching. And see you next time.